Welcome to the Giants Talk Podcast. Here's Alex Pavlovich and Cole Kuiper. I know those guys.
Hey everybody, I am Alex Pavlovich along with Cole Kuiper. We're here every Monday and Thursday to talk Giants with you on the NBC Sports Podcast Network. Today, a very special guest on Giants Talk. Brandon Crawford is having his best season, his best first half, really. We'll see where this all goes, but right now he has 16 home runs. It's not even the All-Star break yet. He is almost certainly headed for Coors Field and the All-Star game. So it was a lot of fun. Somebody I've covered for over a decade now to talk to Brandon about how he got here and how he remade his swing and got back to this point on both sides of the ball. That is coming up. First, as always, a shout out to Wendy's, our sponsor. Right now at Wendy's, get two breakfast sandwiches for just $4. This is really weird because you did Summer Sundays and I covered this game. I don't work a lot of Sundays. I try to have a normal life once a week until we tape our podcast on Sundays. But I covered this game because it's Giants A's. And so we're sitting in the same suite, like alongside the press box. And I'm like, people who watch the podcast on YouTube, I just want to like stare over. You're in the corner and just want to like, you're like, hey, Cole, but yeah, we're awkwardly sitting like 8 feet away from each other looking into different laptops.
So it is pretty cool to be at the ballpark here for this because the energy has been absolutely incredible this series. Giants didn't quite complete the sweep on Sunday, but Friday, Cueto start. What did you think about that? Because I have literally had people who listen to this podcast tell me, wow, you don't like Johnny Cueto anymore. Just by the tone I use when I talk about him the last few weeks. So I'm going to have to apologize formally to Johnny for that. I think I was just a little frustrated on a few of these Sundays. But he looked great out there.
Yeah, he was – I was realized this in like the third inning that night. He was the absolute perfect person to be on the mound Friday night when there was 36,000 people here. And you mentioned the energy. Like I thought the energy the whole weekend was just incredible. And I'm not somebody who's like – into hyperbole. I think people probably realize that listening to the podcast or following me, but it really was like a very cool moment on Friday night with two outs in the ninth inning when Jake McGee came in and everybody here stood and everybody had stayed and they were all standing up. They were all into it. And it just really was like, I think everybody in the press box kind of got chills because it's been a long time since we've experienced anything like this. You know, none of us have been around that many people for the last year plus. So to have 36,000 people there on Friday night, and then they were just into it. It was just a party atmosphere, fireworks night. San Francisco, like everything about San Francisco was shining through. I'll just say that in the late innings. And Johnny was, I think he was feeding off of it. And it was cool to watch and makes you realize like, you know, all these guys, obviously they're really talented and Johnny is a you know, Cy Young caliber pitcher at his peak. But a lot of these guys have gotten used to pitching in front of 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 people. And we know Johnny's personality. Like, we know he feeds off of things like that. And he did not enjoy pitching in front of cardboard cutouts last year. It was a difficult thing for him to deal with. And I think we just saw a guy who was really enjoying being in the moment. And we've seen that in the playoffs from him in 2016. Like, that's why the Cubs were sort of terrified of him going back to Wrigley Field in game five. And so that was my main takeaway from that game on Friday was just Johnny feeling the energy. And the other takeaway I had from that night was that like the Giants are the best team in baseball and they have 50 wins and they have done this without home field advantage, which is something not every team is going to have. And certainly the teams in their division, like I think the Padres have lost like once since they got full crowds back, like the two teams they're competing with are going to have the same thing, but they are a team that is always going to have big crowds here and very energetic crowds and crowds that are behind them. And I think sometimes that'll make a difference over the last, you know, 86, 85 games that they have left. And we haven't seen that for the last year and a half, but they got to experience it this weekend.
It's going to be interesting to see how they fare going into LA the next couple of games. Cause like you said, that stadium is going to be absolutely insane. And they have some of their big guns on the mound facing the Giants. So I'm excited for that. Let's talk Saturday because Saturday was one to remember. Giants got off to a early start with a Lamont Wade Jr. home run and then kind of went tit for tat back and forth with runs and home runs before Solano tied it up in the eighth. I was about ready to go to bed. I'm a early sleeper.
But I noticed just that.
Got up and took a lap.
Yeah, that was so Saturday was the night. It was my only day off this week and there was only one thing I could do. And that was go see Fast 9 and go to theaters, just sit back, put my feet up.
And did you get a large popcorn?
No, I went to one of those fancy theaters where they give you like, you can actually,
so you got like a,
I had like a lobster grilled cheese sandwich and and like loaded tater tots.
Did you get a beer at the theater?
Yeah, I got a Corona because it was. Yeah,
I was gonna say.
So it was I went with my friend, who's also, he's probably the only person I know who's as into those movies as me and you are, mm-hmm. and we both ordered different drinks, and then like everybody else with us was ordering, and then he looks down at the bottom of the menu and realized that they had added Coronas, and so then we both were like, excuse me, we have to change our orders because there's only one thing we can drink when we're watching Vin Diesel. Vin
Diesel, by the way, you can have any beer you want.
He held a Corona in the movie and did not drink it. So that was the only,
I saw
the only spoiler I'm going to give. But I'll bring this back to baseball, which is that I kept checking my phone and, you know, the Giants are falling behind. And it's just, it's gotten to a point where I just never think they're going to lose a game, to be honest. I mean, they lost today, but
it's like that one year with the Warriors where no matter how far they were behind, it's like, oh, no worries.
So it's like, how is this going to, how is this going to happen? And I have the MLB notifications on. And so I, you know, sneak a peek and it's like the Lamont Wade Jr. hits a 2-run homer. And it's like, okay, there goes the early lead. The Giants are back. And then they fall behind and it's like Wilmer Flores and then Donovan Solano. And you just never think they're out of it. I got home in time to watch the end of it. And like, that was just like, I think everybody who's watching this year probably felt the same way, that like, that was the way this was going to end. And it doesn't matter who's out there. I mean, it's Steven Duggar scoring from first. Like it's this cast of characters. It's like a Fast and Furious movie. Like there's 40 people who are contributing and they're just bringing people out of nowhere and they're having a big moment. So that was just another, I think that was like, and obviously that was the 50th one of the year, but I think that was one that a lot of people around the Bay Area probably just went, the Warriors are a great description. It's just like, what has to happen for this team to lose a game? And then Sunday we saw, but
I think what you're trying to say is that the Giants don't have fans. They have family.
They have a big family here.
But you're totally right. That Duggar interview after the game was incredible. He was still sucking wind talking to Greg Papa from just going so hard in the base paths. He talked about how if they had given him a stop sign, he was going to blow through it, which is also the Fast and Furious mentality, it is. I feel like.
We haven't talked enough about Duggar on this podcast, but at some point we'll – and I want to sit down with him too and – dig into his last couple years that he's had, but it's pretty incredible where he's come from. So
yeah, I would love to even have him on a guest. Let's see what we can do.
We'll add him to the list.
Add him to the list. I guess we do have to talk Sunday a little bit. You mentioned it a little. What could stop this Giants team? It turns out that many runs, 6 runs will do it. They're not going to score 7 in the 9th, apparently. But the bats managed to get something happening. You know, there was a glimmer, a twinkle in our eye towards the end of the game. So at least, you know, I walked away with a smile.
Yeah. I mean, what can stop them? Joe Ross and Cole Irvin. Like, that's what – and nobody has those. So it's not Yu Darvish. It's not it has been those guys at times. Bauer and Buehler did a good job against them the first time. But they've hit some really good pitching this year. And then Joe Ross and Cole Irvin's had a good year. I thought he was really good on Sunday. That's about as good as I've seen from anybody against the Giants this year. And just was setting him down quickly, too. So – those games are going to happen. I think it's just really, you know, there will be a rough stretch at some point this year. It's just really interesting right now because even a game like this, you just kind of go like, all right, well, they've won 9 of 10 before this. So
keep taking the series.
Yeah. They took the series. They have a lead in search of the Bridge Trophy. So,
yeah.
And look, that A's team's really good and they did a nice job of holding him down. I go back to Friday night, like Johnny in some really big spots, striking out Chapman, striking out Olson. It's a good team, and it's a good heart of the lineup, and it's a team that plays pretty similar to the way the Giants do, and it was a good series. You know, maybe this is the year we finally get – I don't want to get too far ahead of us, but get Giants-Dodgers in the playoffs or maybe Giants-A's. I don't – it's just – those are two teams that I think they're just always good games. Like, there's a blowout here and there, but they're just always good games, and I feel like they've always been good games the last few years with the A's, and Friday night was a great game. Saturday was a great game. Sunday was – not so much, but they got into it. So
I feel like Brody Brazil and the A's crew might be saying Sunday was the great game, yeah. Alex.
But it was not like a poorly played game, right? Like they went down because the A's did everything right. Like they're scoring on squeezes and on sacrifice mm-hmm. flies. And even like those throws home weren't hitting the backstop. Like those throws home were on target. The A's were just a split second ahead of every throw home. So and Cole Irvin, you just tip your cap and say you pitched really well. So
Also want to give a shout out to the A's fans because we know they travel well, but they were making some noise here today.
They traveled
and it
really
was a
well.
Lot of fun. You know, yeah. They had some chants going. The Giants had some chants going. I got to imagine I wasn't at the game Saturday night, but that had to have been the hardest this stadium has been rocking in 3-4 years. Before the pandemic shutdown, certainly.
I think we go back to 2016 probably. I asked Buster this after today's game if there was something he compared to, and he kind of smiled and was like, well, I don't know about comparing decibel levels. So it was like, good point, Buster. Yes. But
yeah.
I think we go back to 2016 and when this place was rocking back then, because right away the next year they lost 98 games and it wasn't the same after that. And we've had moments, we've had Timmy come out of the center field gate, but mm-hmm. for sustained energy for 9 innings and for sustained energy for a series, I think you have to go back to the 2016 postseason.
Yeah, to the Cubs. It was a little getting used to, though, to get back to this full capacity stadium. You know, the bathroom lines, I was like, oh, man, that's right. I have to strategically plan my pee breaks during the game.
Yeah, that's one I think there's not much they can do about. The concessions are I think, going to become a problem. Mm-hmm. I know they're a little short-staffed right now still. And look, team, you're trying to go from no fans to 8,000 fans to like, what, 12, 13. And then all of a sudden, here's 36,000 fans on a Friday night. Wow. Like, everybody wants a drink. Everybody wants garlic fries. Everybody wants a crab sandwich. I hope that before the next big series, they ramp that up a little bit, because I think that's the one thing I heard from some fans on Twitter and on Instagram and even some friends who came to the game, that it was like, you know, you go to get a beer, you're gone for 45 minutes. So
what's that going to be next Monday, the 5th, against the Cardinals? So hopefully the growing pains are sorted out by then.
Yeah. I don't know if the Cardinals we'll see if they draw the same.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. I don't know. You have to probably go to the end of July, maybe, when the Dodgers come in here, and okay. They have some time, but, yeah, you know, we talked to Larry on this podcast last Monday, and he made the point that it is like a incremental thing here, and things are coming back slowly. The crab sandwiches are back, so that's good. But, yeah, I think it was a big jump to go from a max of 18,000 over the last year and a half to go to 36,000 people. So,
well, it would be really nice if we could get those 36,000 people to start voting for the All-Star game. Because Brandon Crawford just barely squeaked in. Alex, before I dive into this, can you kind of explain how they're doing it this year? Because it seems like they're making it unnecessarily
idiotic.
Just for fun?
Guess what Major League Baseball decided? That All-Star voting is now done in phases. And it's not even like a one week. It's just like there was like three different updates for the first phase. And then on a Sunday morning, they announced the finalists. Sunday morning at 9 a.m. on the West Coast, like, here are your All-Star finalists. Voting starts on Monday. It goes through Thursday.
It's back to zero votes, so we're clean slate?
It's down to three finalists. I think they're trying to do, like, a...
like a bracket?
Yeah, like, this. Now let's start over from, you know, now let's have a real intense, like, 4 days of voting. I don't know. I feel like All-Star voting used to be a bigger deal. Whatever they were doing 5-6 years ago, like, go back to that. That was working, and... I don't think it's a problem if Buster Posey has a million more votes than Yadier Molina and just runs away with it. Like, I don't know why they have to start fresh on a Monday morning, and especially
well-deserved.
Yeah. And I think it puts some teams in a bad position. Like, I expect Buster to win that vote, but the Giants go on the road the next 2 days. They're off on Wednesday. Not a whole lot of opportunities for the franchise to push Buster Posey and push Brandon Crawford and Mike Yastrzemski. And, so it's, you know, luckily they played the Dodgers. This game should be watched by a lot of people on NBC Sports Bay Area, and a lot of people should be paying attention. But just doesn't make any sense to me that, like, and even Crawford snuck in third place in shortstop. But Tatis had over 2 million votes. Like, and now he starts from scratch. So it's just MLB, like, complicating things for no reason. And I think we might get some weird, you know, it's basically a 4-day sprint now, so yeah. You might get some weird internet campaign somewhere, and I don't know, somebody who's not deserving to be it. We've seen this from the Giants before. What if Javi Baez beats Tatis and Crawford?
Yeah, I mean, was it 2012 where half the All-Star team was Giants?
Yeah, that probably wasn't great either. But I think it's been pretty good the last few years. It just didn't seem like something that needed fixing.
Yeah, I have such fond memories of sitting in the bleachers at Candlestick with a pen and poking holes in those ballots one at a time. It was just,
yeah,
it was awesome. It was great. And I know, obviously, they're not going to go back to exclusively paper ballots, but that's what I think of when I think of All-Star voting, not like filling out some online tweet or however they do it now.
And you know what I think of is like players campaigning for other players and making videos for each other. And I think it was one year when the Brandons were kind of pushing each other. And I don't know what's going on here. I just like, did anybody know that on Sunday morning the All-Star results were being announced?
Absolutely not. Yeah.
No, I happened to see it in an email, so I turned on MLB Network before leaving the house. But I don't think anybody even cared.
All right, when it's all said and done, pitchers, backups, everything included, what do you think, 3 All-Stars?
I'm going to say 4 because I think they have 3 locks. I think Buster's going to start. Kevin Gausman's making the team. Crawford's making the team. I think even if Crawford doesn't get voted in, which he probably won't get voted in. And let's be honest, like Tatis, that's 25
Junior. I mean, he's like one of the faces of baseball. He's one of those guys who, even if he were hurt, he would get the 2 million votes because he is who he is.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And I'm one of those, like, I know that a lot of people on Twitter like hate how much certain players are pushed. I'm one of those, like, give me every Tatis highlight, give me every Shohei Ohtani highlight.
Mm-hmm.
Build the game. It's the same with the NBA, right? Like, give me everything Steph Curry does. And other fan bases too are like, I will watch this. I'll watch every shot Steph makes. Like, so give me everything those guys do. No knock on our local guys. But but Crawford's gonna make it on the player ballot. I really think he's gonna win that. And then Gausman, Posey, and I think they're gonna get a 4th. I mean, they're gonna go in with the best record potentially in baseball. Tyra Rogers has like a 1.43 ERA. Gabe Kapler kind of hinted today that he might make a phone call or send a text to Dave Roberts or the right parties. And then DeSclafani has a shot. I mean, if he goes out there Monday night and outduels Trevor Bauer, like, that's a guy he's competing with directly for an All-Star spot.
I think it'd be really fun to see Rogers out there with that delivery because of, you know, obviously it becomes a big thing every time a new team comes into town and faces him. All their beat writers and all their fans are like, what is up with this guy's delivery? So putting that on a national stage where fans from every team get to see it would be a blast.
My favorite thing is that every single time the Giants go on the road, the USA Today Sports Images writer, which is what we use as our wire, they always take like 6 photos of Tyra Rogers because it's some guy in Pittsburgh who's never seen this before. And he's their local photographer. And he just goes like, that's a great point. I think Rogers, it's one of those, like, you want to see cool things, right? Like, we want to see Vlad Jr. We want to see Ohtani. I'd love to see Ohtani pitch in that game. Even if it's just for, I know his health is watched closely, but it'd be great if in a tight spot in the 7th inning, Tyra Rogers comes in, and a lot of people around the country who have never seen him before all of a sudden go like, whoa. So
what is up with this kid?
That's what we want in the All-Star game. So we want guys to be rewarded, but he has a 1.43 ERA. He should be there anyway. So that should give him the edge, how cool he is to watch.
I like that. So we do have Brandon Crawford coming up in just a bit, but before we get to that, we talked about it a little bit earlier, and we also dedicated some serious time on the podcast up to now just talking about Fast and Furious. We're not going to give any major spoilers, but what grade are you giving this movie?
Yeah.
And will you recommend, like, hey, Giants Talk fans, go see this?
Crawford will be up in like 45 seconds to 90 seconds, so you can skip ahead if you want to. First of all, my favorite moment of this week was John Miller reading a F9 promo on one of the broadcasts during the Angels series and just talking about how there's a lot of action and Vin Diesel and all that. Like, he really sold that. And I asked him about it on Sunday, and he's like, well, it seems like every time I turn the TV on in a hotel room, there's a car flying off of a train onto the back of a truck bed. And I'm like, yeah, that pretty accurately describes Fast Five. So you've clearly seen that in a hotel room at some point. So shout out to John Miller, who's just awesome.
Did you hear Mike say that the only person with a deeper voice than John Miller is Vin Diesel?
That's a good point. That is a good point. Whenever we get John on here, I'm going to ask him for his memories of watching random action movies in hotel rooms when the Giants are on the road.
I remember once, I think it was a spring training game, and I was on a long drive, and I was listening to John try to describe the movie The Incredible Hulk, and he couldn't remember what movie he was describing. And I wanted to text him, but I was driving and be like, John, it's the Hulk. Yeah. It's the Hulk.
He 100% nailed the Fast and Furious franchise and what it is. To go back to your question, I'm going to give it like a 7.5, an 8. You're staring at me like,
what? Did we see the same movie?
That's out of 7.5. No, I have very high standards for those movies. I think when people see it, there's a couple of places where I was like, have we fully jumped the shark here? Like, have we?
Yeah, but here's the thing. We're like backflipping the shark, dude. We are intentionally jumping the shark to historic levels.
I will just say, the friend I'm watching it with turned to me when a certain thing happened and said, so where do they go from here? Like,
time travel.
That's a good, yeah. There's a point in the movie where you go, okay, where do they go with the next one? Because there was a card that they could always play, and they played it.
And they did play the Trump card. About 2 hours
into this movie.
I also appreciated how they kind of went Avengers Endgame style with the trailers, where all of the wild moments from the trailers happen in the first 15 minutes of the movie. So I had no idea what else was really going to go down.
No, there's a lot of surprises in this movie. It's a good time. That is on my rating of like, I have very high standards for you guys. And it was still a very good time. I would go see it a second time. I might go see it a second time. Giants are off on Wednesday. We're not doing ourselves any favors here, but what did you give it? A 10? I think you texted 10 me out of 10. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10, no notes, no edits. Early front runner for best picture.
Okay, fair point. Look, it is, here's what I will say. You will not have a better time in, I was a little disappointed that they played that card that I thought they were going to play in like Fast 14 or 15, whenever we get Fast 20, like, I thought we'd get.
They did it in a tasteful way, though.
Kind of. But I will say that go see it with some friends. Go see it early, and you know, have a good time. It is a good time at the movie theater. It's just a really fun like 2.5 hours.
The movie theater I went to see it did not serve Coronas in it, unfortunately. Luckily, we brought a 6-pack of our own.
Yeah, so you're set. Just have it. Have a good time. It's the perfect thing. Like when the Giants are off, you've been riding this Giants wave. You want to keep that energy going. You pop into the theater and right away you see Vin Diesel. By the way, Vin Diesel cut the sleeves off of every shirt he wore in this movie, which was,
that's right.
That might take it to a 10 out of 10. It was good, but that's probably enough Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. Talk. Welcome talk. To Fast and Furious talk hosted by Colin Allen. Yeah,
we'll wait till we get John Miller on the podcast. It's going to be 45 minutes of it.
All right. Let's tap in with Brandon Crawford. What do you think?
Yeah, I think we should look. Brandon Crawford, like, really unbelievable what he's doing. It's the comeback he's had this year, and to be having a career year. And you know, I really wanted to ask him about some of the changes he's made, and we dug deep into that with the swing changes. And you asked him about his off season, and then of course we had to ask him, you know, some baseball movie questions, and get to the end because. We had to ask Brandon Crawford when he's going to get on the mound. So a fun interview with Brandon Crawford, who will be in the All-Star game in a few weeks, barring something completely unforeseen happening. Here it is. Enjoy Brandon.
Hope lives here in California, but during these challenging times, we could all use a little extra support. Visit calhope.org for free COVID-19 emotional support resources, or call our warm line at 1-833-317-4673.
Brandon Crawford, you are our latest guest on Giants Talk, and people might not know this. You were actually the first ever guest on the podcast I started a long time ago. It was the Giants Insider podcast back then, and I think the audio here is going to be a lot better. Hopefully people can hear us this time. It was me and you in a dugout with the mic I didn't know how to use, and Henry Schulman, who has given us both a lot of grief for being low talkers, asked afterwards how we could do something that was audio-based, but it worked. So welcome back.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, thanks for having me.
You are turning back the clock to then in some respects at the plate. And I think what's so interesting, and I don't know if it's gotten enough play so far, is that you've made some pretty big changes to your swing this late in your career. And that's my first question for you. How difficult is it, you know, when a new staff comes in, you're 33, 34 years old, to do what you've done, to change your stance, to change where you put your hands?
I mean, after the 2019 season, I was kind of open arms to anything, any changes that they had for me, any thoughts, any ideas. And that's kind of how our first meeting went with the hitting group. I mean, that I saw them in Arizona, I want to say December, probably, right after they had gotten on board, and kind of asked what I had for them. And I was like, no, what do you guys have for me? Because I'll pretty much listen to anything right now to try to kind of change either my approach or my swing or anything. So we worked on a few things in January, and mostly like bat path drills and stuff like that to just kind of keep me in the zone a little bit longer. Because 2019, I grounded out a lot to the right side, and my swing had gotten pretty, my path and swing had gotten pretty rotational, to where I was kind of just like sweeping across the zone instead of like staying through the middle of the field for a longer period of time. So that was the biggest thing that we were focused on, and just kind of the changes with the hands and the setup and stuff like that were just really just to make everything easier to be able to keep my bat through the zone as long as possible. All the drills were geared towards that also.
Yeah, that gets us in. We had Gabe on here a few weeks ago, and he said one thing about your swing is that now it's just very direct and very aggressive to the ball. And I guess that gets into you being a little bit sweeping before. How much do you think that has made an impact? Just being, it does seem like you're just on time with everything, and it doesn't matter. I mean, you know, a few weeks ago, whether it's a lefty in Texas, it doesn't matter whether it's a fastball or a breaking ball, you're on time. How much was the emphasis just being more direct to the ball and being more aggressive with some of those swings?
I mean, I don't want to say I wasn't aggressive in you know, the second half of 18 or 19. I was still trying to hit the ball hard. It was just my timing and the pitch and everything had to be like perfect for me to be able to do that at that time, I feel like. So I think the aggressiveness is probably the same. It's just everything's simplified now, to where there are times where I feel like I can kind of look off speed and still be quick enough to a fastball, because there's not a whole lot going on with my swing or setup or load or anything like that anymore, to where I feel like I can at least foul off a fastball even if I'm looking off speed, where there haven't been many times in my career where I've felt that. So I mean, I think that's big for feeling like I'm on time for, you know, fastballs or off speed, where I can kind of sit in between and kind of just react out of the hand, and my swing's simple enough to be able to put a good swing on it. So,
Brandon, what was your off season like this past year? Because Gabe and some of your teammates have noted how just visibly incredibly good shape you're in, and just praised you for the work you've put in. And you know, when Gabe Kapler says you're in good shape, that you're doing something right.
I was probably more consistent than I've ever been in the weight room this off season. I mean, partly just because travel wasn't really an option this off season. So most of the time, my family and I will go on vacation, or maybe just me and my wife will go on vacation somewhere, and it's a little bit harder to get some of the workouts in. But I mean, I think everybody does that. I think we all deserve that at some point during the off season. But I was just a lot more consistent getting in to the stadium and being able to work out. And I think we progressed through the off season pretty well. You know, being able to add weight and add some strength, staying on conditioning. So just keeping on top of it and staying more consistent, I think has helped a lot.
I'm going to have to come to you for some tips after we get off the air, because those buys are looking nice.
I know you and I have talked about this a lot, and the defensive metrics have changed with how people view infielders especially, and sometimes, you know, don't match up for you with what we're seeing on the field. This year they are again a little bit. Right now you're top 10 in all of baseball and outs above average, and I think are starting to, you know, open eyes a little bit again defensively. I mean, how gratifying is it for you, just because there probably were some people, and I'm sure you heard this the last couple of years, and some of your coaches have said this, that they heard people say that you had taken a step back, and to show that defensively you are still at that level, is that maybe as important as what you're doing at the plate?
I mean, yeah, I mean, you know, I've always kind of prided myself on being able to play defense. I know I came up to the big leagues because I could play defense. So and shortstop, I mean, as offensive as a position as it's gotten, it's still a very important defensive position. So, you know, I still work on defense just as hard as I have my swing or any offensive changes that I've made. You know, I still put in the work to keep my defense as sharp as I can. So, I mean, it's nice that the metrics line up, I guess, with how I feel, but I don't know if you'll ever convince me that defensive metrics are very accurate. So,
I know that about you. You know, I looked up when I was preparing for this a story I wrote about you the last time you made the All-Star game, and part of that story was how all the shortstops were way younger than you, and it was guys like Trevor Story back then, and a younger generation. You're still in that position. Now these guys are 22, 23, you're 34 years old. You're still a shortstop. How meaningful is that to you, the fact that you've never played anywhere else as a Giant?
It's very meaningful. I've always kind of looked at myself as a shortstop, even when I was young and I was, you know, playing second base because I was too small to play shortstop, or didn't have a good enough arm to play shortstop.
Have you found that little league coach to...
I was like 13, 14, so I was just out of Little League, went to the 90-foot bases. I mean, I've always thought of myself as a shortstop. So to be able to, you know, to stay in shape, to be able to still move around pretty well for a shortstop and, you know, be able to get jumps and reads on balls and stuff like that, you know, even at 34, I feel like that's very important to me.
Well, we've talked about on this podcast how we want to see you try your hand on the mound, but we'll cycle back to that later. You and Buster have always been super close. What do you think of this season he's having after taking a year off? Did you think he had this kind of comeback in him?
I mean, I think he would probably even tell you the power's probably a little bit surprising, just because in recent years he hadn't you know, hit as many homers, but. But he's healthy again. His hips, I mean, at least relatively healthy. So I think that plays a major factor in him being able to catch and then still get in the batter's box and produce the way he has. So I mean, I don't know if it's surprising because he's, you know, he's such a good hitter and such a good player, but it's awesome to see for sure.
There's something that has stood out to me when I watch you guys after wins, and there have been a lot of them this year. And I think it's how much fun you guys are having out there after a win, and just how much it reminds me of you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. Brandon Belt's still walking through the handshake line with his glove down just to make sure he doesn't get tapped there. And you and Yastrzemski with the dabs and things like that. And we've heard from some of the younger guys that, I think you and Longoria have been kind of instrumental in helping you guys celebrate post game, which not everybody really got to do last year. So I wanted to go there. I mean, does this start to feel a little bit, and has it felt the last couple of months, like some of those years where not only are you guys good and you know it, but you guys are having a lot of fun together as a group?
Yeah. I mean, there are definitely a lot of similarities. I mean, we're definitely having fun. Wins definitely contribute to that though. Wins are always going to be fun. And we have a lot of good guys in the clubhouse that we all get along. We hang out, you know, even a little bit longer after the games, and it's a fun clubhouse to be a part of, a fun team to be a part of. The dugout gets up and for, you know, whoever's driving in runs or scoring runs or whoever, you know, we all have a lot of fun in the dugout during the games and, I mean, I think it's a big part of playing well is that good chemistry that you guys build, you know, in the clubhouse and then bring it out kind of onto the field.
I know there's a lot you keep in the clubhouse and that I always ask probing questions and try to get into what's going on there. But what can you tell us or what can you tell Giants fans about just how you guys are celebrating these wins and are making sure that you're savoring the fact that you guys have been the best team in baseball for a couple months?
It's kind of a party type atmosphere, I guess, where, you know, everybody's coming up and going through the high five lines with lights on and music blasting and stuff like that. And then typically one person is interviewed at the end of the game. So whoever that like player of the game is or whatever comes up a little bit later, and we typically have like a little surprise celebration for them also.
They go straight from NBC Sports Bay Area's post game and they get surprised in the clubhouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
A 1-2 punch. Brandon, I want to shift gears a little bit. My first introduction to Brandon Crawford, I was sitting in the stands, but not the stands at Oracle Park. I was sitting at my high school football stands watching you destroy our hopes of a postseason. So you were a very accomplished quarterback in high school. Which of these three guys would you like to see open in the end zone? Gabe Kapler, Brandon Belt, or Jeff Samardzija the Shark?
Jeff Samardzija. I mean, definitely has the best track record on the football field for sure. And then I don't know if I think you guys have heard now at this point that I like tore a ligament in Cap's finger just playing catch with him one day. So he's out. And then Belt, I can't see how Belt would have gotten open in the end zone to begin with. So
no moves.
I'll go with Samardzija.
Do you feel bad? Like, have you razzed Kapler at all about injuring your manager?
No, I mean, when he wasn't able to straighten his finger, I felt like that was good enough. That was razzing enough. I mean, it was literally just like playing catch. Like we weren't like running routes or anything. Nobody was
full contact.
Yeah. We all wondered what happened. We saw him in the dugout with a splint all of a sudden, and I think that got out a couple weeks later. You bring up Samardzija, and you've played with so many guys. I mean, you've played with like probably what 15, 16 starting left fielders over the years, just alone, and hundreds of guys. Who would surprise us that you keep in touch with, going back to like some of those Terry Oscudero teams, or is it like the Michael Morse Pence generation? Who do you text with a lot that would surprise Giants fans?
I don't text a whole lot with anybody. I'm actually bad about keeping in touch with people. I guess random one from recent history, when we were in DC, I was texting back and forth with Justin Maxwell for a little while.
That is really rare. So
he's a good forever Giant.
Yeah, he is.
That could go in that category.
Alex and I have been having this debate over the past few months on this podcast, and I know you're a big bracket guy. You were doing all your competitions online. So I want you to be the final vote here. What is a better baseball movie, The Sandlot or Major League? And why?
Oh, man. I think those are my top two. So it's tough to choose between those two. I'm going to go with The Sandlot just because I feel like it takes me back to childhood a little bit more. Major League was a little bit later for me. So I'm going to go Sandlot.
I am the pro Sandlot voice on this podcast. I can't get enough, but as you said, that's gotta be the top two.
Yeah.
Everything else is just a race for third place.
I don't think you want to get your kids in the major league yet, but have your kids started watching baseball movies with you?
I think I tried The Sandlot one time, maybe. I think it was during like quarantine last year. The Sandlot was on TV, so I turned it on for him, and I didn't really remember how many things they probably weren't quite ready for yet that are in that movie. So they lost interest anyway, kind of fortunately, but we'll get them back into it in a few years probably.
Your youngest just turned 3, so maybe you have to be careful when you
go back to some of your favorite. My oldest is still 8, so
yeah,
a few more years they'll be ready for it.
Got to be careful there. I know your kids always have, and your wife does a great job of recording their celebrations when you hit a home run or when you make a great play, and they're going crazy. And you probably remember this. There was a Fangraphs story like 6-7 years ago about how you never celebrate, and it was all these incredible plays you had made, and you just, you know, put a finger out, one out, two outs. And I've been watching that.
Was a really fun article to read, actually.
It was. I was very jealous. I never thought of that. But I've been watching it ever since, and you still really – you know, even as the game has changed, haven't changed in that respect. Why would you say that is, and what, where did that come from, and how come you have never changed? Because it, you know, it's a social media age now, and people do something and they get on Twitter and Instagram, but you've kind of just stayed the same your whole career.
I think that it started probably fairly early on. I think it was probably my dad that kind of taught it to me, just to kind of stay even keel, calm, relaxed, so your emotions don't go up and down throughout the course of a game, because there are so many ups and downs in baseball. You know, you hit a home run in the second inning and you get up and excited and start pumping up your team and the crowd or whoever, and then you get, you know, you go out to the field and then you make an error. So then it's like you got so excited and now you made an error, maybe cost the team a run, something like that. So now it's low. I mean, I'm trying to stay as even keel as I can the whole game, until that last out's made, and then, you know, you can smile and have fun and do whatever.
I think we've seen that from you. Cole kind of teased the last question we have for you, which is, do you have any regrets that in your last guaranteed year with the Giants, you've become such a valuable player for them once again that they're not going to put you on the mound?
I wouldn't say any regrets. I definitely would love to at some point. And I told Cap that I was ready. I think we've had two times where a position player has pitched. Is that right? So far. And the first one, I told him I was ready. And he thought about it. And then after the game, he's like, we can't do that. So it's probably not going to happen. But it would be fun at some point.
In the odd case it happens, who's going to give us a better inning, you or Bell?
It depends on how many lefties are in the lineup, because Bell would actually be pretty tough on lefties, I think. Just playing catch with him over the years, how much run and sink he can get on his ball would kind of be tough. But his secondary pitches aren't as good. So,
would you have to impersonate somebody, or would you just play it straight? You not going to pull out the shark.
I would probably throw a shimmy out there, maybe a quick slide step that he does every once, that Johnny does every once in a while. I would honestly, I don't know if I'd go full Rogers, but I would definitely drop down at least once also.
All right. Well, Brandon, you have had a really nice start to the season, a nice bounce back season here that I think has made a lot of Giants fans want to see a new contract this offseason. We'll see how it all goes, but I think you need to write it into that contract that you get to pitch at some point with whoever you're with, because we need to see you imitate Tyler Rogers and Johnny Cueto on the mound.
All right. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the time, Brandon.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.